Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to a mini-episode of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, brought to you by FilmDivider.com. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and I'll be bringing you a truncated version of the show to bridge the gap between our Blade and Hellboy episodes. On today's show, I'll give you my reactions to the comics that Seven James recommended on last week's podcast. Those were Blade, Undead Again, and Welcome Back to the House of Mystery. But before any of that, let's take a look at some of the comic book movie news that has broken over the past week. Okay, it was a busy week this week for news, and we'll kick things off with the trailer for Preacher. AMC debuted the trailer for Preacher during The Walking Dead this last weekend, and as a complete newcomer to the property, it looked pretty good to me. We mostly get to watch Dominic Cooper trying out his best Southern American accent with glimpses at many of the additional members of the cast. Joe Gilgan probably gets the most attention otherwise. He does some fine eyebrow acting and gives Cooper a run for his money with his thick Irish accent in a single line delivered at the end of the trailer. It looks to have been cut to appeal specifically to Walking Dead fans, so there's like dollops of bleakness and bloody violence in there, but there's also a hint of humour as well, which is encouraging. We'll definitely be discussing this more on next week's full podcast with Seven James. Doctor Strange is shaping up to have one hell of a cast, with Michael Stuhlbarg the latest actor in talks to join Scott Derrickson's movie. The actor may still be best known for his lead role in A Serious Man, but he has a habit of being the best thing in anything he appears in, basically. Even though that would be a pretty tough task here in a cast that looks like it's going to be starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Mads Mikkelsen, and Rachel McAdams. Birth Movies Def are speculating that Stuhlbarg will be playing the role of Nicodemus West, who is a fellow surgeon who looks up to Strange and performs the surgery on his hands following his accident. They also seem fairly certain that McAdams will be playing Night Nurse, and that all points towards the Doctor Strange miniseries The Oath serving as an inspiration for this origin story. More casting news, but over at DC, Nicole Kidman is in talks to join Wonder Woman, according to The Wrap. While no deal is yet in place, with Kidman's upcoming schedule apparently a potential stumbling block, if things do work out, though, it sounds like the Aussie actress would be playing their role of a high-ranking Amazonian warrior. The Wrap make the logical leap that that means she'd be playing Hippolyta, the queen of the Amazons, and biological mother of Gal Gadot's Diana Prince. Despite other casting rumours that we've mentioned on the podcast recently, Gadot and Chris Pine are still the only cast members confirmed to appear as of yet. Empire magazine ran a Suicide Squad cover story this month, and we now know a little bit more about that movie. It sounds like on the team itself, Katana is going to be the only volunteer, so she's not got a little bomb in her brain. She'll be serving as Rick Flagg's bodyguard, while Killer Croc will apparently be providing some grisly comic relief. It was confirmed in the piece that Cara Delevingne's Enchantress will not be part of the squad itself, but that her powers will attract the attention of Amanda Waller. And as for Amanda Waller, David Ayer heavily hints in the piece that whoever the squad go up against in the movie, she is truly the big bad. And finally, on the Joker, Ayer has described Jared Leto's take on the character as, quote, more social, a very successful and smart businessman despite being a sociopath. Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the all-powerful Lord Miller, are attempting to bring the greatest American hero back to our screens, and they have now received a pilot commitment from Fox to do so. The comedy drama originally aired in 1981 and followed a schoolteacher who had a super-powered suit powered by extraterrestrials, only he lost the instructions, so he had to learn to use it and its different powers on a weekly basis. The new pilot will be directed by dope director Rick Famuyiwa. From Fox TV to Fox Studios, and now lots of movies undergo reshoots, and the X-Men movies are no exception. Don't believe me? Just watch back the Quicksilver scenes in Days of Future Past. X-Men Apocalypse will be going back in front of cameras in Montreal in January for reshoots, and it is being rumoured that Hugh Jackman will be taking part in those rumours. If that is the case, then it means that Apocalypse will in fact not be the first film in the franchise to be Wolverine-less, which is no great surprise, frankly. Also of note, director Bryan Singer has told us to watch out for the first teaser trailer, which will be dropping soon. More casting now, and French-Canadian actress Pomme Clementeef, who just has a fantastic name, has been cast in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in an unknown role. Clementeef's best-known work prior to this was probably in Spike Lee's Oldboy remake, but she's worked a lot in French cinema. Marvel were apparently specifically serving for an Asian actress, and so Clementeef's casting has led some online to speculate she'll be playing the character of Mantis. In reporting the story, Variety also suggested that Marvel had gone after Matthew McConaughey for the film's villain, but that he'd turned them down. Now, that is a shame if true, but it also has to hint that Star-Lord's father is the villain the second time around, right? And finally, mark this down as firmly a rumour for now, but there is internet chatter about the possibility of Netflix mixing up their Defenders lineup. Now, the original plan was for the site to debut Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage and Iron Fist series before the characters united for a Defenders miniseries. But we've already seen the flexibility in that plan with the addition of a second Daredevil season. The rumour currently circulating is suggesting that Iron Fist will no longer be part of that setup, with John Bernthal's Punisher replacing him in the Defenders, and that instead Iron Fist would be the basis of a Netflix-exclusive movie instead. We're sceptical, and this kind of brings to mind the rumours that Inhumans was being shelved recently as well, which seems not to be the case, as far as we know. But it's definitely worth keeping an eye on, because it's not beyond the realm of possibility. Okay, let's move on now to discussing this week's comic book recommendations. And we'll start off with James's recommendation, which was Blade Undead Again. Now, this is from the 2006 run of Blade comics from Mark Guggenheim and Howard Chaykin. And if my Marvel Unlimited app is to be believed, this series ran for 12 issues, but Undead Again is just the first volume, so it's the first six issues that James has recommended me. And this basically follows Blade, a character who seems to have been redesigned to resemble the Wesley Snipes version from the movies a little bit more. But he still has here his origin story of being born in a brothel in Soho in England, but moved to America eventually, and is kind of going around America hunting vampires. He is a vampire himself, and the setup is very, very similar to the movie in terms of just basically what Blade goes around doing and his means of doing so. This is a series that features lots of different Marvel characters. The first issue features S.H.I.E.L.D. and it features Spider-Man. There is an Art the Run the story in the second issue, which features Blade doing some work for Doctor Doom, which involves him travelling through time. Wolverine shows up in the one issue that is a Civil War crossover. Maria Hill is in that issue as well, so lots more S.H.I.E.L.D. But the main narrative that's running through these six issues, and while it does kind of flash off for different stories of the week throughout this, is kind of like a flashback to Blade's origins. And so we kind of watch him learning to fight vampires for the first time as a child, and that also relates back to the relationship that he has with his mother and who his father might be. And now there's some fairly clunky storytelling here about how Blade and his father come to meet. Now, so they actually have a showdown in the sixth issue, because like in the movie, there is a vampire prophecy that has something to do with Blade and his father. And his father is keen, for some reason that doesn't become clear in these six issues, to make sure that that prophecy actually does come to pass. Now, in the second issue, Doctor Doom sends Blade back in time to save Doctor Doom's mother in a Latverian prison. And Doctor Doom's mother is a gypsy woman who kind of has seen the future and sees Blade coming. And they have to team up together, and Blade goes through a conundrum of, does he kill Doom's mother to stop Doom from ever existing, but doesn't because of narrative convenience. And in that prison, Blade needs the help of a prisoner to get to Doom's mother, and so helps that prisoner escape. Fairly clunkily, it's hinted and confirmed that that character is in fact Blade's father, and Blade is meeting his father years in the past. There's also a line of dialogue in the next issue where Blade's mother says to Blade in a flashback scene, "Oh, your father's in a Latverian prison." So there's really no question of who this guy is, and in the present day we see that he's a powerful US politician. I don't actually know where all that's going, because that doesn't resolve itself within six issues, and frankly it's not that interesting. It's kind of the same thing as the film. Like, it's a vampire prophecy, and it's just words on a page, and it's very difficult to get invested in. In fact, I would say that this comic probably has a lot of the problems that the movie does, in that mostly all Blade can do is go around fighting vampires and killing vampires, and they are by and large fairly disposable, and it's just it can become fairly tiresome to just watch page after page of Blade fighting different vampires. And so the series, I think, does try and mix it up. Obviously, there's that time travel narrative that I mentioned with Doctor Doom, which honestly wasn't very good. The issue with Wolverine is fine, but it seems like a 1 week, how can we tie into Civil War? We'll put Wolverine and Blade up against each other, but really we won't. And they do find a fun way of writing Wolverine into Blade's origin, kind of. But the best issue, as far as I was concerned, was a fairly self-contained issue where Blade has gone off the map. He's gone into hiding, and he's in this small town. It's around Christmas time, and there is like a shopping mall Santa who Blade senses something strange about. And it turns out he has a demon in him, and this demon can basically jump into anyone with a soul, and that means that he can't jump into Blade.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Because Blade is a vampire and doesn't have a soul, but he can put himself into, like, this shopping mall Santa, and the girl that is sat on his lap, and the cop that comes in to try and calm everything down, and it's really grisly, and it's different from just the standard vampire after vampire that is in the rest of the series. It just serves as a really good, solid single issue about, you know, with Blade taking on a supernatural villain. By and large, though, these six issues, and I mean, I did say that this doesn't really resolve any of the Blade and his father plot, and given that I'm assuming this series was cancelled after 12 issues, I don't know whether it would eventually, but I'm just not that I'm just not intrigued enough to read issue 7, even though it's right there on Marvel Unlimited. And that mainly comes down to what I thought was the main appeal of the Blade movies was Wesley Snipes. And Snipes is really cool and looks really cool. And even if all of the vampire stuff around him is pretty generic, he's a cool-ass movie star and I could watch him all day. Blade isn't cool in these comics. I don't know whether it's the way he's drawn. It's just very difficult to think, oh, there is anything that actually defines this character-wise or personality-wise. There's nothing that seems badass about him beyond the idea that he is a vampire hunting other vampires. He just doesn't have that je ne sais quoi that Wesley Snipes does, and for me, that meant that the character just didn't really work on the page. I didn't particularly enjoy his interactions with the rest of the Marvel Universe. In fact, I generally found them to be a bit of a distraction. The Spider-Man cameo in the first issue I thought was fairly unpleasant, and the Doctor Doom stuff was pretty silly. While I think this probably has the same problems of the as the movie, it may in fact be a lot less successful as far as I'm concerned than the movie. And I can see what Seven James mean about the character not really working on the page. I don't think necessarily that he couldn't ever work on the page. It's just that he doesn't seem to do so for me here. A mild thumbs down for Blade Undead again. We'll move on now to Seb's recommendation, which is House of Mystery, or Welcome Back to the House of Mystery, which is basically a collection of stories from various writers and artists, which originally showed up in the pages of the DC Vertigo comics, House of Mystery and Plop. I think 8 of the 10 stories are from House of Mystery and 2 are from Plop. There is a framing story featuring the character of Kane, who seems to be the character who told all of the stories in the House of Mystery comics. And that's written by Neil Gaiman and drawn by Sergio Aragonés. I think Seb mentioned last week that that Sergio Aragonés was a Mad Magazine artist, and that definitely comes across here. After the framing device, which introduces Kane and kind of gives you a bit of context of horror comics and what House of Mystery was and what Plop was and how Kane is going to be guiding you through this story, we get these 10 stories, and it's spread over like 92 pages, I think. So like, I guess the length of about 4 comics. I'll just run through each of these one at a time, and kind of I guess that's probably the only way I really can talk about them. All of these stories they're definitely horror stories that are aimed at children, so they're not grisly, but they have kind of they're not grisly or X-rated. They're just a little bit troubling. I could fully imagine reading a comic like this back when I was primary school age, kind of as something that would creep me out, but maybe not terrify me. They're all good fun, basically. So the first comic, the first story is called The Gourmet, and that is about this basically really greedy guy who is really into eating frogs' legs, and he is into doing that until a lot of frogs on crutches attack him, and basically it looks like they eat his legs and turn him into some like frog-like creature. The next story is called Snow Fun. That is about a guy who murders his partner so he can be the first guy to discover this new civilization that exists under the ice in Antarctica. Except when he's taken down there, when he arrives, he falls into this civilization, meets the people down there, and unbeknownst to him, kind of is there for a lot longer than he realizes and transforms into a creature like them. So when he does eventually escape, he melts. There's one called Nightmare, where a young girl who's lonely, forms a relationship with Pan, who's a little fawn, and she goes off to this other world with Pan, and it's unclear whether it's just her dreaming or whether she actually has done this, and things get pretty scary when she goes into an area of the world that she shouldn't do. Eventually she wakes up and is told that it was just all a fever dream, basically, except there's a hint that it wasn't. There's the secret of the Egyptian cat about an old Egyptian woman who was turned into a cat and eventually turns the tables on her captor and turns him into a mouse. There is the House of Endless Years about some kids that break into the House of Mystery. In fact, it may not be the House of Mystery, but they break into this old house and find this old woman there, and they find actually that anyone who enters the house for any significant of time ages really fast, and so these children age into old age people pretty quickly. Potentially my favourite was the next one called The Demon Within, about a young boy who figures out he has the power to transform into this little grotesque little mischievous demon character who he basically just runs around as this demon, frightening people and being a little, just like a naughty kid basically, but with the ability to turn into this grotesque demon-like character. And his parents are horrified because it kind of brings shame on their family, and they eventually lobotomize him. Yeah, that was my favourite. There is The Burning, about a man who kind of is discovered by this witch, and he has amnesia, and the witch takes him in and cares for him, but he kind of rejects her, and ultimately conspires to have her killed by the rest of the villagers and burned alive, except when that happens the witch decides to send him back to his original form, and it turns out he was just a scarecrow in the first place who she brought to life. There is His Name Is Cain, which is about a comic book artist called Gil Kane, who is sucked into his own artwork and eventually becomes trapped there. Then there is Oh Mom, Oh Dad, You Sent Me Away to Summer Camp and I'm So Sad, about a kid in a wheelchair who goes to summer camp and is terrified because the rest of the kids start murdering the counselors, and the rest of the kids say, no, it's fine, they're actually evil aliens, you should just let us do this. And eventually the kid confides in the counselor and says, look, I'm scared as well, this is what the other kids are doing. Except it turns out that the counselors are evil aliens, and eventually they whisk away the entire summer camp into space under a giant dome. There is Molded in Evil, about a guy who can sculpt characters out of clay who actually come to life, except his wife keeps destroying them, so he turns his wife into a gargoyle. She then comes back to life and kills him as well. So those are all the stories. They're largely really fun. There is a kind of Tales of the Unexpected vibe to them. Some of them have twist endings, but they just seem to just like turn up like in the space of a panel. Here's the twist ending. So it's not like any subversion. It's just like, here's a story, and oh, you didn't see that coming. But similarly, there are also stories in here which just kind of go, hey, like the one with the kids going into the house. It's like, it's pretty well established that the kids going into the house are going to age, and then they do. It isn't something that I could see myself going, oh, I really want to go back and read all of the Tales of Mystery, especially given that these are probably some of the best ones that have been picked out to be read here, because it does seem like something that's been pitched at a lot younger an audience. But I did enjoy this, that they were all fun. Like I said, I think my favourite one was about the kid who could turn himself into a little demon, just because it seemed like there was more of a like parenting metaphor in there that I found quite funny and really dark and twisted. I mean, it doesn't get worse than in these stories. It doesn't get darker than, hey, my parents think I'm naughty, so they lobotomized me. That's pretty grim, but it's fun and twisted in just the right kind of way. So yeah, I definitely preferred this look back at horror comics more than I did actually reading Blade comics themselves. So I would recommend, if you can get your hands on it, it's quite difficult. I had the help of Seb to do so, but Welcome Back to the House of Mystery is a really fun horror comic that, yeah, has definitely shed some light on the history of horror comics, not least because it does some explaining of their context in the comic itself, which is very helpful. But that is it for this week. Don't forget that the next episode of Cinematic Universe will be covering Hellboy, and we'll also be joined by a special guest for that one as well. If you're enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice. And if you've already subscribed, then please leave us a rating or review, and we'll give you a shout-out on a future show. You can find episodes of Cinematic Universe on cinematicuniverse.libsyn.com, or as we're a Film Divider podcast, at filmdivider.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter, at @CU_podcast, or send us an email to cinematicuniversepod@gmail.com. See you next week.